Good morning. This is Lance Kenmore with the Kenmore team, and I'd like to welcome you to this week's edition of the Tri-Cities Real Estate Update. As always, you can contact me, Lance Kenmore, anytime direct on my cell phone at 727-8977 or visit us on the web at kenmoreteam.com. Once again, I always like to thank John for hosting and everybody here at the station for working to make this happen. Mr. John McKay, how are you doing over there?
Well, we're supposed to get a little bit of relief this weekend.
Oh my gosh, McKay. Let me tell you how I'm doing. I now can finally go around and start collecting our portable AC units that we've been shuffling around the last week. When you're in property management and have hundreds of units you take care of, that's a bad week for us last week. I mean, just by pure mathematics, there's going to be some failures. But, you know, we have portable AC units that our landlords lease out from us, and we dispatch our crews and get some emergency relief in there. And
there you go.
And so let me tell you, they were flying out the door earlier this week, and we were shoving those around. And you know what was interesting, too? Here's something slightly ironic for you, is at the office, one of our zones went out this week also.
Oh.
So the property management office had a problem in there. So we weren't immune from it ourselves. But
so everybody, hey, can I borrow your office with you? You've got AC.
Yeah, so we kind of suffered through because we had also sent out all of our temporary units to tenants. So, you know, this is what we do. So I'm with you. Glad to have a little bit of relief, get back to some manageable temperatures. And
whoever thought we'd think, 89 to 92, that's not bad.
Feels amazing. Feels absolutely amazing. Well, on a much cooler front, we always like to start off with our crazy national celebrity story. And this time, I am taking you to a British island that inspired Agatha Christie.
Oh.
So there's an island called Berg Island, and this is the inspiration where Christie wrote "And Then There Were None" and "Evil Under the Sun." So the island has a hotel on it that was built in 1929. It's a 21-acre island, and it has 25 ensuite guest bedrooms. Famous guests over the years included the Beatles stayed there. Josephine Baker, the Duke and Duchess of Windsor, and it's even rumored that President Eisenhower and Prime Minister Winston Churchill met at that hotel before D-Day in 1945.
Ooh.
So long storied history. It was bought years ago by Giles Fuchs, and he said in a statement, "It's been a privilege. They've restored and enhanced the Island Hotel. He's incredibly proud of what they've done there, but he said that owning the property took over his life." Like, meaning he had some other businesses and some other interests, but this became, I think anybody that's ever operated a boutique style hotel, it definitely becomes like you are committed to that thing. So anyway, you can own your own island in the UK for $19 million. I didn't do a cash flow analysis on that, McKay, but as cool as it looks, that is a pretty penny.
I was going to say, though, compared to some of the California and other properties stateside, I'm thinking,
I know, this is
historic English.
This is actually a moneymaker compared to some of the other ones that we have talked about on the show. So, fun little, the pictures are gorgeous. If you get a chance, take a look at that. I did 6 months of schooling over in the UK. So I always, I think my heart is always a little bit connected to those English stories. So, there are things you have to, I did some real estate training while I was over there. And the thing about UK and property is they have, most people here in the U.S. purchase under what's basically a freehold state, meaning that your house is built on land that you own and can be passed down to your family. Much of England and London included, townhouses and old brownstones you see there are like on 99-year leaseholds. So actually that, you know, that lease at some point is going to be renewed by a family that owns that. So very different, a lot of differences in English real estate. So fun to spend some time over there studying that. And but I do, my heart comes home and do enjoy our system a lot more here. Well, speaking of systems and governments and how different things happen that can affect real estate, today I'm going to be talking about a major change that was only probably slightly covered in the news. And so back on May 8th, earlier this year, Governor Inslee signed House Bill 1110, and it's commonly known as the Middle Housing Bill. Okay, and there's years of advocacy that has gone through this, really focusing on the affordability of housing in Washington State, especially around Puget Sound, King County areas. But this is a Washington State law. So the actions of what has happened again here on the west side are going to affect what goes on the east side. But I'm not saying that in a negative light. It's just you need to be aware of this. This was a law that was signed into effect that is going to have, I believe, some major changes to how we operate with real estate, even here in the Tri-Cities. And so what the Middle Housing Bill is doing is trying to encourage what we call middle housing. Okay. And middle housing is defined as very specific units. So let me give you some examples. It is defined, there's nine units that's defined by this House bill. And that is duplexes, triplexes, fourplexes, fiveplexes, sixplexes, townhouses, stacked flats, courtyard apartments, and cottage housing, like a house, you know, a carriage house behind. Okay, so you're thinking, well, Lance, what does that have to do with me here in the Tri-Cities? Well, what that has to do with you here in the Tri-Cities is that this bill drastically changed in Washington what we know as single-family residential zoning, SFR zoning, okay?
Yep.
And so, but the point here is, let me give you the Lance Kenmore basic overview of what's going on here. Basically, as prices have increased, people, especially in that first-time home buyer starting price range, let's just say in Tri-Cities, let's call that 350 to four, you know, our average price right now is running around 450, but let's just call that 350-ish. Very, very difficult to find something in decent shape, you know, on your own parcel for that price, the way prices have increased. So what the attempt to do here is to make it easier for builders and developers to build more dense housing, meaning like in the past, when you look at single family zoning, if you had a house, you know, 5 years ago, you couldn't even put, maybe there was a detached garage out back and you said, well, let's change that detached garage into a one bedroom apartment. Well, that's called an ADU, accessory dwelling unit. Well, the problem is if you look at single family zoning, it's in the name, meaning one family, one unit on that property. If you were to add an ADU like that, now you have two dwelling units on a property and you violate the zoning. So what the House Bill 1110 has done is for the most part eliminated a large amount of single family zoning moving forward. So what that says is cities between 25,000 and 75,000, and this was signed into law on back on May 8th, signed by Governor Inslee, but went into effect in July. Cities between 25,000 and 75,000 must allow two housing units on all residentially zoned lots.
Hmm.
Allow up to 4 housing units on all residentially zoned lots within a quarter mile of walking distance to a major transit stop. Now, that won't affect Tri-Cities much, but you can see in King County and the other counties where it will. Mm-hmm. But it is going to have an impact on us here. And then allow up to 4 housing units on all residentially zoned lots that provide for affordable housing on at least one unit. So what you have happening here, so people, you know, at first, a couple people realized what was going on and have commented on it. And there was a lot of people are like, wait a minute, hold on. There's a lot to unpack here. And you're exactly right. There is a lot to unpack here. Because the very first thing that came out from people was, the very first question is CC&Rs, covenants, conditions, and restrictions. Those are recorded rules for neighborhoods against properties. Well, the CC&Rs in most, like, if you look around, like, say, like, in Tri-Cities, people would know a Creekstone or a Handsome Park or Country Ridge. Okay, some of those bigger developments like that have CC&Rs that say one unit. On top of zoning, have CC&Rs that say there can be no more than one livable unit. CC&Rs that were recorded before July 23rd of 23 of this year will stay in effect. Mm. So those will trump the law. The law will not trump those. Moving forward, though, new developments that are done, here's the kicker. And here's why this people don't realize this immediately now, is because these are phased in based upon when counties review their comprehensive plan.
Okay.
Okay, so Benton and Franklin County will have that review due in June of 2026.
Okay.
Okay, so in 3 years. And then 6 months after that, these laws go into effect for those counties.
So does that mean you can't put one house on one lot anymore?
Okay, here's the thing.
Because a lot of people, to be honest, a lot of people see this as an assault on traditional single family homes.
Yes, and so here's the thing. It's not that you can't. You can still do that, but your neighbor could be allowed to put 2 units on that lot beside you, or put a duplex right beside you, especially if it's new development, because moving forward, the CC&Rs will not allow for that. Now, here is a very interesting thing that is a part of it. And the cities have the option to review this, but here's how it reads. The alternative density requirement says a city may choose to limit implementation of the density requirements to 75% of lots that are primarily dedicated to detached single family houses. So what that means is that as they approve development moving forward, these laws will apply to 75%, but the city can determine 25% of those that they want to maintain the SFR zoning, the single family zoning. Mm-hmm. So a portion of the city will stay that way. Now, I have not been in touch with city officials yet. It's so early in this. I'm sure they're scrambling to figure out committees and plans and that type of stuff. We don't know. In our 3 cities or 4 or 5 cities, we don't know where that will be. And it's very specific on population, meaning cities between 25,000 and 75,000 have the 2 housing. Cities of more than 75,000, which if you can trust just some quick Google research, shows that Pasco and Kennewick surpassed 75,000.
Yep.
And Richland was listed, I think, at 67,000 a year or two ago. So I don't know. It could even be that the requirements are different in Richland than they are in Kennewick and Pasco. This will come down to how the cities implement this. But of more than 75,000, that density requirements goes up to 4 housing units, meaning you could have a development that has single family lots. And if it's big enough to fit a fourplex on, you could have a fourplex next to a single family house.
So it all depends on how you subdivide.
It all depends on how that gets subdivided. There are going to be building requirements that you still have to meet the normal building requirements. Mm-hmm. But what they've done is they have tried to make this easier. And let me give you an example of what this is designed for. You, for instance, you know, there's a lot of multi-generational living going on where people are like, my parents are selling their house, but they want to move to a one-story, 1,000-square-foot condo. But the way prices have gone, man, that's almost the same price for what they're selling their big house for is what they're going to get a new one. But I tell you know what? I have a half-acre lot. I thought I was going to put a shop in the back corner. I've always wanted a shop, but my wife has convinced me now that her parents have to move in with us. and so instead of my dream shop, I'm going to put an ADU back there for my parents.
Okay.
Now I'm being facetious as I tell my story, but this is so that you could say, hey, let's put a 2-bedroom, 1-bath ADU accessory dwelling unit in the back corner of our lot. Your parents can sell their house, use that money that they would have purchased instead of having to buy a $150,000 lot and then build. They can have that money for their retirement and move on to our property into our ADU. So that's one example. Or first-time home buyers that, you know, are struggling. You want them out of your house, but they can't quite afford their new house. You know, let's build an apartment back there for the kids that then they can rent for us and start to establish some history there. So these are the types of housing solutions that this bill is trying to accomplish. Now, it's going to take a while for, I'm glad we have a little bit of time because it's going to take a while for cities to kind of figure out exactly what the rules and stuff look like this. When we come back from the break, I'm going to go over what is required as far as design standards in this situation, a little bit more about what happens with ADUs and how we think this might start affecting the way people look at alternative housing here in Tri-Cities.
Right here on News Talk 870. Our house in the middle of our street. Our house in the middle of our house in the middle of our street. Our house in the middle of our
Welcome back to the Tri-Cities Real Estate Update. Today we've been diving into some of the specifics of House Bill 1110. Which really affects middle housing options and will make its way, as written now, will make its way to Tri-Cities and have an impact starting in 2027. And so we've been kind of looking into what that means, what that looks like. Before we jump into some of those requirements, I did want to get a pick three out there because we do have some exciting new inventory. And I'm going to take you on a major, major tidal wave of prices this week. So I'm going to start you out with our entry-level pricing, amazing property. Pick number one, 2401 West Canal Drive. This is unit 4A. This is up in the condo complex called the Palisades up there off of Canal Drive. This is a 2-bedroom, 2-bath condo, 1,030 square feet, ground level, so no steps, you know, into this. Just really seamless integration of indoor-outdoor spaces, great flow. Slider opens up to the courtyard, very well maintained in this condo association there. And great kitchen, flow-through kitchen design, right into a great eating nook. Community pool. Absolutely. Just really serene retreat, spacious primary bedroom, got great size in there. And then you also have a 1-car garage with this unit that comes with this unit. So here we are, condo, 1-car garage, well-maintained. And that price point is coming in at $259,900. Very, very hard to find something like we talked about earlier in that good a shape for that price range. Pick number two, 524 West Intia. This is a 3-bedroom, 2-bath, Central Kennewick, 1275 square foot home. Multifamily zoning, the potential for conversion into a duplex. We've been talking a lot about that on the show today as things are going to change in the future with that. Not just one, but 2 kitchens, 2 full bathrooms, attached 1-car garage and an enclosed back porch. Awesome garden, tool shed, expansive outdoor space. Great, great property with very cool location. And that's coming in priced at $330,000. Now, I'm going to take you to our most expensive listing. This is not a pick three. This is actually in Tri-Cities. Or this is not a crazy celebrity property. This is actually in Tri-Cities. Our most expensive listing right now, but it's a development opportunity. So we are super proud to bring to the market a 29-acre property in South Richland, subdividable within Richland city boundaries. Hard to find that. Just off of Saron near Dallas Road. So up there in that White Bluffs area off of Queensgate, right back there. 29 acres, developable in South Richland. Mm. And that's coming in priced at $3.77 million. Wow. And so there's a lot of different ways that you could parcel that up, put in a full development in that property. I've seen drawings that go anywhere from 70 lots to 105 lots, depending upon density and how you do it. So anybody looking to do a larger development like that, this is a great opportunity to take a look at a prime, prime piece of land. Well, John, before the break, we were talking about this middle housing law.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, which basically a lot of people, if you sensationalize it, say they're doing away with single family zoning. Well, some of it they are, and it is a major change from what we've had in the past. So I dug around a little bit to kind of see who else has done this, because this is pretty new, and it is a major change in how things have done. So from what I could find from doing my research, back in 2018, Minneapolis was one of the first major U.S. cities to do this. So it didn't make a major, major impact right away. Mm-hmm. And so that's, you know, one reason I wanted to do the show, because there are going to be things people start to notice in 2027, 2028. I mean, your neighbor puts up a apartment in the backyard, and if you're not aware of this happening, you're gonna be like, I tried to do that 10 years ago and I couldn't.
Yeah,
but now it's allowed, and so you're gonna start seeing things like that. But it was really, really interesting. Since they did that, over the course of the first 2 years that they allowed duplexes and triplexes to be built on single family zoned lots, which makes up about half the city of Minneapolis, the city permitted only 64 duplexes and 21 triplexes.
Interesting.
And half of those duplexes were on lots that were really unaffected by it. So the implementation of it is not as quick as I think people thought it would be. Because I think a couple things will factor into that case too. And some of that is, you know, area traditions and what you're used for. Like we're not used to that type of housing here in Tri-Cities. And so the uptake on it is slower than in other markets. So for instance, the best example I can give of that here locally that's happened is, do you know like where the Country Mercantile is? Okay, so Badger South, developer comes in, West Side developer, West Side Architects, phase one draws up alley-loaded houses where you drive down the back alley, you know, porches are on the front of the street. Sales, you know, this was like, gosh, I'm getting old, but this was like probably 10 years ago. Sales in that first phase, super slow, because McKay, how many alley loaded back, you know, garage developments can you even think of in the Tri-Cities? I mean, the only other ones that come to mind at all are some old Central Kennewick or some Pasco stuff off of like, you know, Road 15, you know, on 15th. So there is some, but that's not a normal layout for our area. So people were slow to take up, you know, that type of housing. And so that caused sales to be very slow. And then it wasn't till the next phases of Badger South, when they built out some acreage lots, some more traditional lots, that that development really started to take off. And you do see now some apartments in Badger South, some townhouses coming up for rent. So But it took a little while. Like, I don't think when this hits in 2027, we're just going to see, like, everybody going crazy and, like, you know, duplexes everywhere. There wasn't any. But it is going to, you are going to start to notice, I think, the ADU type units that we talked about for multi-generational living, maybe an additional, if a duplex was on a large lot, like, usually investors own duplexes for returns. And if they are on a large lot that originally only allowed one unit and now allows four, you could see them add another duplex onto that property very, very easily, assuming that it meets the requirements of the normal requirements of the setbacks and for the city.
Yeah.
Now, interestingly enough, this law said that in design review, local governments may not impose aesthetic standards or requirements for design review that are more restrictive for ADUs than those for principal units. And there is a clear and objective design review standards for the exterior design of these new developments. So basically what they're saying there is that they don't want this to have to go through a long design review process by a committee. They're trying to get this down to a single staff member making check boxes. Mm-hmm. Does it meet the requirements? Boom, let the builder or the family go build the house. Mm-hmm. So they are. Also, the local government may not require street improvements as a condition of permitting for accessory dwelling units. So basically what they're saying, because a lot of times, you know, when cities start to restrict development, they'll say like, oh, you can do that, but we're going to have a street improvement, or we're going to have an additional sewer hookup out in the street versus, you know, tapping into an existing line. Mm-hmm. Those are just examples. So they're trying to take some of those roadblocks out of the way to make the ADUs and the middle housing more accessible for builders and developers to go ahead and go through. Now, what I also found was interesting about it is one of the requirements that the city has to choose is at the top of the hour, I read you off a list of what middle housing units were. Mm-hmm. And that was the duplexes, triplexes, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, townhouses, courtyard apartments, and cottage housing. All cities have to do is they have to pick six of those. They do not have to allow all nine. Mm-hmm. So, right. So you might see a city come in and say, well, we definitely don't want a five and a sixplex. That's too many people on the smaller lots. So we're going to axe those and allow cottage housing or allow ADUs. Or you might have them say, hey, you know, they also might play some games in there and say like, hey, a sixplex and a fiveplex will never fit on any of our single family lots. So let's say those are two of our six, because then we won't have to deal with it as often. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's going to be some gamesmanship that goes on here. And so it'll be interesting to kind of see what happens as that kind of plays out. I also don't know exactly, you know, who is the final say on population and census data? So are all three cities going to have the same requirements, or are Kennewick, Pasco, Richland, you know, likely are all going to be slightly different? So, so you'll need to know what those are. But one of the things I just wanted to get out there for people is that even though there are changes, you know, the good thing about it is that CC&Rs are protected that were already in place. So I didn't want people to panic and say like, oh my gosh, my house, I specifically went to a development that had CC&Rs that prohibited that and was tight control because I didn't want, that's what I wanted. That's what I wanted to live in. I always wanted it to look the same. Well, just, you know, rest assured that as long as those CC&Rs are in place and have been enforced, those are still going to trump the new law. But as we move forward in new development the next 10, 15 years, you know, we are going to see a mix, more of a mix of housing happening because of this, because only 25% of the developments are going to be restricted to single family. Mm-hmm. And John, you and I were talking on the break a little bit. There's actually an argument that says some of those developments might become, you know, more desirable for people that want single family zoning only. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, if they're grandfathered in at that, you might see a bump of like, oh man, I'm going to go here because it is, you know, it's all single family zoning. It's going to come down to personal preference and what people are looking for. But
yes,
I will tell you, you know, there's some great arguments for. I do hope that with good design standards and good development, there we are going to see some cool things come out of this. Meaning, like, I have been into some other cities and seen some where I think there's some opportunities for families that when an ADU is done right, it is a really cool setup. When you have one family and then you have your retired parents in the back, you know, unit property living close and multiple generations on one property, I've seen some really cool setups come out of that and also some long-lasting memories for those types of families.
Exactly.
Also, I can't tell you, and I'm not saying most people want these, but I probably field 5 calls a month of people trying to get rid of their kids into rentals with our rental company. No joke. It's at least 5 a month of like, hey, and it's hard because they don't have income requirements. They don't have job history yet, but they're trying to launch them out of the nest. Well, I tell a lot of them, I'm like, what you should have done is 10 years ago, you should have bought a rental and then you can deal with them as their first landlord. Well, ADUs like these or apartments in these situations or multiple dwelling units will definitely allow people a transition, I think, that allows people to kind of take that baby step as family members transition out of the house. So we're going to be monitoring this, definitely be very involved in this because it also is a chance to create equity and additional housing units within within our cities. And so this falls right in our wheelhouse. If you have any questions about what you heard today or need access to some of the links about that, go to kenmoreteam.com, shoot us a message. It's a very, very cool topic, but there will be some negative things to navigate as we go through this. So I'd love to have that discussion with somebody looking for some help with that. As always, stay cool, enjoy as we're back into a tolerable temperature. And we will be right back here next week.
Right here on News Talk 870. Our house.